remember names and kept confusing dates. He simply skipped question four. In your opinion, did one legislation contribute to or lead to better control of goblin riots of the 18th century? Thinking that he would go back to it if he had time at the end. He had a stab at question five. How was the Statute of Secrecy breached in 1749, and what measures were introduced to prevent a recurrence? But had a nagging suspicion that he had missed several important points. He had a feeling vampires had come into the story somewhere. He looked ahead for a question he could definitely answer, and his eyes alighted upon number 10. Describe the circumstances that led to the formation of the International Confederation of Wizards, and explain why the warlocks of Liechtenstein refused to join. I know this, Harry thought, though his brain felt torpid and slack. He could visualize a heading in Hermione's handwriting, The Formation of the International Confederation of Wizards. He had read these notes only this morning. He began to write, looking up now and again to check the large hourglass on the desk beside Professor Marchbanks. He was sitting right behind Parvati Patil, whose long dark hair fell below the back of her chair. Once or twice he found himself staring at the tiny golden lights that glistened in it when she moved her head very slightly, and had to give his own head a little shake to clear it. The first supreme mugwump of the International Confederation of Wizards was Pierre Bonaccord, but his appointment was contested by the wizarding community of Liechtenstein because... All around Harry, quills were scratching on parchment like scurrying, burrowing rats. The sun was very hot on the back of his head. What was it that Bonaccord had done to offend the wizards of Liechtenstein? Harry had a feeling it had something to do with trolls. He gazed blankly at the back of Parvati's head again. If he could only perform legilimency and open a window in the back of her head, and see what it was about trolls that had caused the breach between Pierre Bonaccord and Liechtenstein. Harry closed his eyes and buried his face in his hands so that the glowing red of his eyelids grew dark and cool. Bonaccord had wanted to stop troll hunting and give the trolls rights, but Liechtenstein was having problems with a tribe of particularly vicious mountain trolls. That was it. He opened his eyes. They stung and watered at the sight of the blazing white parchment. Slowly he wrote two lines about the trolls, then read through what he had done so far. It did not seem very informative or detailed, yet he was sure Hermione's notes on the Confederation had gone on for pages and pages. He closed his eyes again, trying to see them, trying to remember. The Confederation had met for the first time in France. Yes, he had written that already. Goblins had tried to attend and been ousted. He had written that too. And nobody from Liechtenstein had wanted to come. Think, he told himself, his face in his hands, while all around him quills scratched out never-ending answers and the sand trickled through the hourglass at the front. He was walking along the cool, dark corridor to the Department of Mysteries again, walking with a firm and purposeful tread, breaking occasionally into a run, determined to reach his destination at last. The black door swung open for him as usual, and here he was in the circular room with its many doors. Straight across the stone floor and through the second door, patches of dancing light on the walls and floor, and that odd mechanical clicking. But no time to explore. He must hurry. He jogged the last few feet to the third door, which swung open just like the others. Once again he was in the cathedral-sized room full of shelves and glass spheres. His heart was beating very fast now. He was going to get there this time. When he reached number 97, he turned left and hurried along the aisle between two rows. But there was a shape on the floor at the very end. A black shape moving upon the floor like a wounded animal. Harry's stomach contracted with fear, with excitement. A voice issued from his own mouth, a high, cold voice empty of any human kindness.
Take it for me. Lift it down now. I cannot touch it, but you can.
The black shape upon the floor shifted a little. Harry saw a long-fingered white hand clutching a wand rise on the end of his own arm, heard the high, cold voice say,
Crucio!
The man on the floor let out a scream of pain, attempted to stand but fell back, writhing. Harry was laughing. He raised his wand, the curse lifted, and the figure groaned and became motionless.
Lord Voldemort is waiting!
Very slowly, his arms trembling, the man on the ground raised his shoulders a few inches and lifted his head. His face was bloodstained and gaunt, twisted in pain yet rigid with defiance.
"You'll have to kill me,"
whispered Sirius.
"Undoubtedly I shall in the end,"
said the cold voice.
"But you will fetch it for me first, Black. You think you have felt pain thus far? Think again. We have hours ahead of us and nobody to hear you scream."
But somebody screamed as Voldemort lowered his wand again. Somebody yelled and fell sideways off a hot desk onto the cold stone floor. Harry hit the ground and awoke, still yelling, his scar on fire, as the great hall erupted all around him. Chapter 32. Out of the Fire. "I'm not going. I don't need the hospital wing. I don't want..." He was gibbering, trying to pull away from Professor Tofty, who was looking at him with much concern, and who had just helped Harry out into the entrance hall while the students all around them stared.
I'm fine, sir," Harry stammered, wiping the sweat from his face. "Really, I just fell asleep. Had a nightmare."
"Pressure of examinations,"
said the old wizard sympathetically, patting Harry shakily on the shoulder.
"It happens, young man, it happens. Now, a cooling drink of water, and perhaps you will be ready to return to the Great Hall. The examination is nearly over, but you may be able to round off your last answer nicely."
"Yes," said Harry wildly. "I mean, no, I've done as much as I can, I think."
"Very well, very well,"
said the old wizard gently.
"I shall go and collect your examination paper, and I suggest that you go and have a nice lie down."
"I'll do that," said Harry, nodding vigorously. "Thanks very much."
He waited for the second when the old man's heels disappeared over the threshold into the great hall, then ran up the marble staircase, and then more staircases towards the hospital wing, hurtling along the corridors so fast that the portraits he passed muttered reproaches, and burst through the double doors like a hurricane, causing Madame Pomfrey, who had been spooning some bright blue liquid into Montague's open mouth, to shriek in alarm.
"Potter, what do you think you're doing?"
"I need to see Professor McGonagall," gasped Harry, the breath tearing his lungs.
"Now, it's urgent."
"She's not here, Potter,"
said Madame Pomfrey sadly.
"She was transferred to St. Mungo's this morning. 4 stunning spells straight to the chest at her age. It's a wonder they didn't kill her."
"She's gone?" said Harry, stunned.
The bell rang just outside the dormitory, and he heard the usual distant rumbling of students starting to flood out into the corridors above and below him. He remained quite still, looking at Madame Pomfrey. Terror was rising inside him. There was nobody left to tell. Dumbledore had gone. Hagrid had gone. But he had always expected Professor McGonagall to be there, irascible and inflexible, perhaps, but always dependably, solidly present.
"I don't wonder you're shocked, Potter,"
said Madame Pomfrey with a kind of fierce approval in her face.
"As if one of them could have stunned Minerva McGonagall face on by daylight. Cowardice, that's what it was. Despicable cowardice. If I wasn't worried what would happen to you students without me, I'd resign in protest."
"Yes," said Harry blankly. He wheeled around and strode blindly from the hospital wing into the teeming corridor where he stood, buffeted by the crowd, the panic expanding inside him like poison gas, so that his head swam and he could not think what to do.
"Ron and Hermione,"
said a voice in his head. He was running again, pushing students out of the way, oblivious to their angry protests and shouts. He sprinted back down 2 floors and was at the top of the marble staircase when he saw them hurrying toward him.
"Harry,"
said Hermione at once, looking very frightened.
"What happened? Are you all right? Are you ill?"
"Where have you been?"
demanded Ron.
"Come with me," Harry said quickly. "Come on, I've got to tell you something."
He led them along the first floor corridor, peering through doorways, and at last found an empty classroom into which he dived, closing the door behind Ron and Hermione the moment they were inside and leaning against it, facing them.
"Voldemort's got Sirius."
"What?
How do you..."
"Saw it, just now, when I fell asleep in the exam."
But
Where? How?
Said Hermione, whose face was white.
I don't know how, said Harry, but I know exactly where.
There's a room in the Department of Mysteries full of shelves covered in these little glass balls, and they're at the end of row 97. He's trying to use Sirius to get whatever it is he wants from in there. He's torturing him, says he'll end by killing him. Harry found his voice was shaking, as were his knees. He moved over to a desk and sat down on it, trying to master himself.
How are we going to get there?
He asked them. There was a moment's silence, then Ron said,
Get there?
Get to the Department of Mysteries so we can rescue Sirius, Harry said loudly.
But, Harry,
said Ron weakly. What?
What?
Said Harry. He could not understand why they were both gaping at him as though he was asking them something unreasonable.
Harry, said Hermione in a rather frightened voice, how did Voldemort get into the Ministry of Magic without anybody realizing he was there?
How do I know? Bellowed Harry. The question is how we're going to get in there.
But, Harry, think about this, said Hermione, taking a step toward him. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The Ministry of Magic must be full of workers. How would Voldemort and Sirius have got in without being seen?
Harry, they're probably the two most wanted wizards in the world. You think they could get into a building full of Aurors undetected?
I don't know. Voldemort used an invisibility cloak or something, Harry shouted.
Anyway, the Department of Mysteries has always been completely empty whenever I've been.
You've never been there, Harry, said Hermione quietly. You've dreamed about the place, that's all.
They're not normal dreams, Harry shouted in her face, standing up and taking a step closer to her in turn. He wanted to shake her.
How do you explain Ron's dad, then? What was all that about? How come I knew what had happened to him?
He's got a point,
said Ron quietly, looking at Hermione.
But this is just so unlikely, said Hermione desperately. Harry, how on earth could Voldemort have got hold of Sirius when he's been in Grimmauld Place all the time?
Sirius might have cracked and just wanted some fresh air, said Ron, sounding worried. He's been desperate to get out of that house for ages.
But why?
Hermione persisted.
Why on earth would Voldemort want to use Sirius to get the weapon, or whatever the thing is?
I don't know. There could be loads of reasons, Harry yelled at her. Maybe Sirius is just someone Voldemort doesn't care about seeing hurt.
You know what? I've just thought of something, said Ron in a hushed voice. Sirius's brother was a Death Eater, wasn't he? Maybe he told Sirius the secret of how to get the weapon.
Yeah, and that's why Dumbledore's been so keen to keep Sirius locked up all the time, said Harry.
Look, I'm sorry, cried Hermione, but neither of you are making sense, and we've got no proof for any of this. No proof Voldemort and Sirius are even there.
Hermione, Harry's seen them, said Ron, rounding on her.
Okay,
she said, looking frightened yet determined.
I've just got to say this.
What?
This isn't a criticism, Harry, but you do sort of, I mean, don't you think you've got a bit of a saving people thing, she said.
He glared at her. And what's that supposed to mean, a saving people thing?
Well,
she looked more apprehensive than ever.
I mean, last year, for instance, in the lake, during the tournament, you shouldn't have, I mean, you didn't need to save that little Delacour girl. You got a bit carried away.
A wave of hot prickly anger swept Harry's body. How could she remind him of that blunder now?
I mean, it was really great of you and everything, said Hermione quickly, looking positively petrified at the look on Harry's face. Everyone thought it was a wonderful thing to do.
That's funny, said Harry through gritted teeth, because I definitely remember Ron saying I'd wasted time acting the hero. Is that what you think this is? You reckon I want to act the hero again?
No, no, no,
said Hermione, looking aghast.
That's not what I mean at all.
Well, spit out what you've got to say, because we're wasting time here, Harry shouted.
I'm trying to say Voldemort knows you, Harry. He took Ginny down into the Chamber of Secrets to lure you there. It's the kind of thing he does. He knows you're the sort of person who'd go to Sirius's aid. What if he's just trying to get you into the Department of Miss...
Hermione, it doesn't matter if he's done it to get me there or not. They've taken McGonagall to St. Mungo's. There isn't anyone left from the Order at Hogwarts who we can tell. And if we don't go, Sirius is dead. But Harry, what if your dream was just that, a dream? Harry let out a roar of frustration. Hermione actually stepped back from him, looking alarmed.
You don't get it, Harry shouted at her. I'm not having nightmares, I'm not just dreaming. What do you think all the occlumency was for? Why do you think Dumbledore wanted me prevented from seeing these things? Because they're real, Hermione. Sirius is trapped. I've seen him. Voldemort's got him, and no one else knows, and that means we're the only ones who can save him. And if you don't want to do it, fine, but I'm going, understand? And if I remember rightly, you didn't have a problem with my saving people thing when it was you I was saving from the Dementors, or... He rounded on Ron. When it was your sister I was saving from the Basilisk. I never said I had a problem, said Ron heatedly. But Harry, you've just said it, said Hermione fiercely. Dumbledore wanted you to learn to shut these things out of your mind. If you'd done occlumency properly, you'd never have seen this. If you think I'm just going to act like I haven't seen... Sirius told you there was nothing more important than you learning to close your mind. Well, I expect he'd say something different if he knew what I'd just...
The classroom door opened. Harry, Ron, and Hermione whipped around. Ginny walked in, looking curious, closely followed by Luna, who as usual looked as though she had drifted in accidentally.
Hi,
said Ginny uncertainly. We recognized Harry's voice. What are you yelling about? Never you mind, said Harry roughly. Ginny raised her eyebrows.
There's no need to take that tone with me, she said coolly. I was only wondering whether I could help.
Well, you can't, said Harry shortly.
You're being rather rude, you know, said Luna serenely.
Harry swore and turned away. The very last thing he wanted now was a conversation with Luna Lovegood.
Wait, said Hermione suddenly. Wait, Harry, they can help.
Harry and Ron looked at her.
Listen, she said urgently. Harry, we need to establish whether Sirius really has left headquarters.
I've told you, I saw...
Harry, I'm begging you, please, said Hermione desperately. Please, let's just check that Sirius isn't at home before we go charging off to London. If we find out he's not there, then I swear I won't try and stop you. I'll come. I'll do whatever it takes to try and save him.
Sirius is being tortured now, shouted Harry. We haven't got time to waste.
But if this is a trick of Voldemort's... Harry, we've got to check. We've got to.
How? Harry demanded. How are we going to check?
We'll have to use Umbridge's fire and see if we can contact him, said Hermione, who looked positively terrified at the thought. We'll draw Umbridge away again, but we'll need lookouts, and that's where we can use Ginny and Luna.
Though clearly struggling to understand what was going on, Ginny said immediately,
Yeah, we'll do it.
And Luna said,
When you say Sirius, are you talking about Stubby Boardman?
Nobody answered her.
Okay, Harry said aggressively to Hermione. Okay, if you can think of a way of doing this quickly, I'm with you. Otherwise, I'm going to the Department of Mysteries right now.
The Department of Mysteries?
Said Luna, looking mildly surprised.
But how are you going to get there?
Again, Harry ignored her.
Right, said Hermione, twisting her hands together and pacing up and down between the desks. Right, well, one of us has to go and find Umbridge and send her off in the wrong direction. Keep her away from her office. They could tell her, I don't know, that Peeves is up to something awful as usual.
I'll do it, said Ron at once. I'll tell her Peeves is smashing up the Transfiguration Department or something. It's miles away from her office.
Come to think of it, I could probably persuade Peeves to do it if I met him on the way.
It was a mark of the seriousness of the situation that Hermione made no objection to the smashing up of the Transfiguration Department.
Okay,
she said, her brow furrowed as she continued to pace.
Now, we need to keep students away from her office while we force entry or some Slytherin's bound to go and tip her off.
Luna and I can stand at either end of the corridor, said Ginny promptly, and warn people not to go down there because someone's let off a load of garrotting gas. Hermione looked surprised at the readiness with which Ginny had come up with this lie. Ginny shrugged and said,
Fred and George were planning to do it before they left. Okay, said Hermione,
Well then, Harry, you and I will be under the invisibility cloak, and we'll sneak into the office and you can talk to Sirius.
He's not there, Hermione.
I mean, you can check whether Sirius is at home or not while I keep watch. I don't think you should be in there alone. Lee's already proved the window's a weak spot, sending those nifflers through it.
Even through his anger and impatience, Harry recognized Hermione's offer to accompany him into Umbridge's office as a sign of solidarity and loyalty.
Okay, thanks, he muttered. Right, well, even if we do all of that, I don't think we're going to be able to bank on more than 5 minutes,
said Hermione, looking relieved that Harry seemed to have accepted the plan.
Not with Filch and the wretched inquisitorial squad floating around. 5 minutes will be enough, said Harry. Come on, let's go.
Now? Said Hermione, looking shocked. Of course now, said Harry angrily. What do you think, we're going to wait until after dinner or something? Hermione, Sirius is being tortured right now.
Oh, all right, she said desperately. You go and get the invisibility cloak, and we'll meet you at the end of Umbridge's corridor, okay?
Harry did not answer, but flung himself out of the room and began to fight his way through the milling crowds outside. 2 floors up, he met Seamus and Dean, who hailed him jovially and told him they were planning a dusk-till-dawn end-of-exam celebration in the common room. Harry barely heard them. He scrambled through the portrait hole while they were still arguing about how many black market butterbeers they would need, and was climbing back out of it, the invisibility cloak and Sirius's knife secure in his bag, before they noticed he had left them.
"Harry, do you want to chip in a couple of galleons? Harold Dingle reckons he could sell us some fire whiskey."
But Harry was already tearing away back along the corridor, and a couple of minutes later was jumping the last few stairs to join Ron, Hermione, Ginny, and Luna, who were huddled together at the end of Umbridge's corridor.
"Got it," he panted. "Ready to go, then?"
"All right,"
whispered Hermione as a gang of loud sixth years passed them.
"So, Ron, you go and head Umbridge off. Ginny, Luna, if you can start moving people out of the corridor, Harry and I will get the cloak on and wait until the coast is clear."
Ron strode away, his bright red hair visible right to the end of the passage. Meanwhile, Ginny's equally vivid head bobbed between the jostling students surrounding them in the other direction, trailed by Luna's blonde one.
"Get over here,"
muttered Hermione, tugging at Harry's wrists and pulling him back into a recess where the ugly stone head of a medieval wizard stood muttering to itself on a column.
"Ah, are you sure you're okay, Harry? You're still very pale."
"I'm fine,"
he said shortly, tugging the invisibility cloak from out of his bag. In truth, his scar was aching, but not so badly that he thought Voldemort had yet dealt Sirius a fatal blow. It had hurt much worse than this when Voldemort had been punishing Avery.
"Here," he said.
He threw the invisibility cloak over both of them, and they stood listening carefully over the Latin mumblings of the bust in front of them.
"You can't come down here,"
Ginny was calling to the crowd.
"No, sorry. You're going to have to go round by the swiveling staircase. Someone's let off garrotting gas just along here."
They could hear people complaining. One surly voice said,
"I can't see no gas."
"That's because it's colourless," said Ginny in a convincingly exasperated voice.
"But if you want to walk through it, carry on. Then we'll have your body as proof for the next idiot who didn't believe us."
Slowly the crowd thinned. The news about the garrotting gas seemed to have spread. People were not coming this way anymore. When at last the surrounding area was quite clear, Hermione said quietly,
"I think that's as good as we're going to get, Harry. Come on, let's do it."
Together they moved forward, covered by the cloak. Luna was standing with her back to them at the far end of the corridor. As they passed Ginny, Hermione whispered,
"Good one. Don't forget the signal."
"What's the signal?"
muttered Harry, as they approached Umbridge's door.
"A loud chorus of Weasley is our king if they see Umbridge coming,"
replied Hermione, as Harry inserted the blade of Sirius's knife in the crack between door and wall. The lock clicked open, and they entered the office. The garish kittens were basking in the late afternoon sunshine warming their plates, but otherwise the office was as still and empty as last time. Hermione breathed a sigh of relief.
"I thought she might have added extra security after the second niffler."
They pulled off the cloak. Hermione hurried over to the window and stood out of sight, peering down into the grounds with her wand out. Harry dashed over to the fireplace, seized the pot of flu powder, and threw a pinch into the grate, causing emerald flames to burst into life there. He knelt down quickly, thrust his head into the dancing fire, and cried,
Number 12, Grimald Place. His head began to spin as though he had just got off a fairground ride, though his knees remained firmly planted upon the cold office floor. He kept his eyes screwed up against the whirling ash, and when the spinning stopped, he opened them to find himself looking out upon the long, cold kitchen of Grimald Place. There was nobody there. He had expected this, yet was not prepared for the molten wave of dread and panic that seemed to burst through his stomach floor at the sight of the deserted room. "Sirius!" he shouted. "Sirius, are you there?" His voice echoed around the room, but there was no answer except a tiny scuffing sound to the right of the fire. "Who's there?" he called, wondering whether it was just a mouse. Creature, the house elf, came creeping into view. He looked highly delighted about something, though he seemed to have recently sustained a nasty injury to both hands, which were heavily bandaged.
"It's the Potter boy's head in the fire,"
Creature informed the empty kitchen, stealing furtive, oddly triumphant glances at Harry.
"What has he come for, Creature wonders?"
"Where's Sirius, Creature?" Harry demanded. The house elf gave a wheezy chuckle.
"Master has gone out, Harry Potter."
"Where's he gone? Where's he gone, Creature?" Creature merely cackled. "I'm warning you," said Harry, fully aware that his scope for inflicting punishment upon Creature was almost non-existent in this position. "What about Lupin, Mad-Eye? Any of them? Are any of them here?"
"Nobody here but Creature,"
said the elf gleefully, and turning away from Harry, he began to walk slowly toward the door at the end of the kitchen.
"Creature thinks he will have a little chat with his mistress now. Yes, he hasn't had a chance in a long time. Creature's master has been keeping him away from her."
"Where has Sirius gone?" Harry yelled after the elf. "Creature! Has he gone to the Department of Mysteries?" Creature stopped in his tracks. Harry could just make out the back of his bald head through the forest of chair legs before him.
"Master does not tell poor Creature where he is going,"
said the elf quietly.
"But you know," shouted Harry, "don't you? You know where he is."
There was a moment's silence, then the elf let out his loudest cackle yet.
"Master will not come back from the Department of Mysteries,"
he said gleefully.
"Creature and his mistress are alone again."
And he scuttled forward and disappeared through the door to the hall. "You..." But before he could utter a single curse or insult, Harry felt a great pain at the top of his head. He inhaled a lot of ash and, choking, found himself being dragged backward through the flames until, with a horrible abruptness, he was staring up into the wide, pallid face of Professor Umbridge, who had dragged him backward out of the fire by the hair and was now bending his neck back as far as it would go, as though she was going to slit his throat.
"You think..."
she whispered, bending Harry's neck back even further so that he was looking up at the ceiling above him.
"That after 2 Niflis, I was going to let one more foul, scavenging little creature enter my office without my knowledge? I had stealth censoring spells placed all around my doorway after the last one got in, you foolish boy. Take his wand,"
she barked at someone he could not see, and he felt a hand grope inside the chest pocket of his robes and remove the wand.
"Hers, too."
Harry heard a scuffle over by the door, and knew that Hermione had just had her wand wrested from her as well.
"I want to know why you are in my office,"
said Umbridge, shaking the fist clutching his hair so that he staggered.
"I was trying to get my firebolt,"
Harry croaked.
"Liar,"
she shook his head again.
"Your firebolt is under strict guard in the dungeons, as you very well know, Potter. You had your head in my fire. With whom have you been communicating?"
"No one," said Harry, trying to pull away from her. He felt several hairs part company with his scalp.
"Liar!"
shouted Umbridge. She threw him from her, and he slammed into the desk. Now he could see Hermione pinioned against the wall by Millicent Bulstrode. Malfoy was leaning on the windowsill, smirking as he threw Harry's wand into the air one-handed and then caught it again. There was a commotion outside, and several large Slytherins entered, each gripping Ron, Ginny, Luna, and, to Harry's bewilderment, Neville, who was trapped in a stranglehold by Crabbe and looked in imminent danger of suffocation. All 4 of them had been gagged.
"Got 'em all," said Warrington, shoving Ron roughly forward into the room. "That one,"
he poked a thick finger at Neville,
"tried to stop me taking her."
He pointed at Ginny, who was trying to kick the shins of the large Slytherin girl holding her.
so I brought him along too.
Good, good, said Umbridge, watching Ginny's struggles. Well, it looks as though Hogwarts will shortly be a Weasley-free zone, doesn't it?
Malfoy laughed loudly and sycophantically. Umbridge gave her wide, complacent smile and settled herself into a chintz-covered armchair, blinking up at her captives like a toad in a flower bed.
So, Potter, she said, you stationed lookouts around my office and you sent this buffoon,
she nodded at Ron, and Malfoy laughed even louder,
to tell me the poltergeist was wreaking havoc in the Transfiguration Department, when I knew perfectly well that he was busy smearing ink on the eyepieces of all the school telescopes, Mr. Filch having just informed me so. Clearly it was very important for you to talk to somebody. Was it Albus Dumbledore? Or the half-breed Hagrid? I doubt it was Minerva McGonagall. I hear she is still too ill to talk to anyone.
Malfoy and a few of the other members of the Inquisitorial Squad laughed some more at that. Harry found he was so full of rage and hatred, he was shaking.
It's none of your business who I talk to, he snarled.
Umbridge's slack face seemed to tighten.
Very well, she said, in her most dangerous and falsely sweet voice. Very well, Mr. Potter. I offered you the chance to tell me freely. You refused. I have no alternative but to force you. Draco, fetch Professor Snape.
Malfoy stowed Harry's wand inside his robes and left the room smirking, but Harry hardly noticed. He had just realized something. He could not believe he had been so stupid as to forget it. He had thought that all the members of the Order, all those who could have helped save Sirius, were gone. But he had been wrong. There was still a member of the Order of the Phoenix at Hogwarts. Snape. There was silence in the office, except for the fidgetings and scufflings resultant from the Slytherin's efforts to keep Ron and the others under control. Ron's lip was bleeding onto Umbridge's carpet as he struggled against Warrington's half-Nelson. Ginny was still trying to stamp on the feet of the sixth-year girl who had both her upper arms in a tight grip. Neville was turning steadily more purple in the face while tugging at Crabbe's arms, and Hermione was attempting vainly to throw Millicent Bulstrode off her. Luna, however, stood limply by the side of her captor, gazing vaguely out of the window as though rather bored by the proceedings. Harry looked back at Umbridge, who was watching him closely. He kept his face deliberately smooth and blank as footsteps were heard in the corridor outside, and Draco Malfoy entered the room, closely followed by Snape.
"You wanted to see me, headmistress," said Snape, looking around at all the pairs of struggling students with an expression of complete indifference.
"Ah, Professor Snape,"
said Umbridge, smiling widely and standing up again.
"Yes, I would like another bottle of Veritas Serum as quick as you can, please."
"You took my last bottle to interrogate Potter,"
he said, surveying her coolly through his greasy curtains of black hair.
"Surely you did not use it all. I told you that 3 drops would be sufficient."
Umbridge flushed.
"You can make some more, can't you?"
she said, her voice becoming more sweetly girlish as it always did when she was furious.
"Certainly," said Snape, his lip curling. "It takes a full moon cycle to mature, so I should have it ready for you in around a month."
"A month?" squawked Umbridge, swelling toadishly. "A month? But I need it this evening, Snape. I have just found Potter using my fire to communicate with a person or persons unknown."
"Really?"
said Snape, showing his first faint sign of interest as he looked around at Harry.
"Well, it doesn't surprise me. Potter has never shown much inclination to follow school rules."
His cold, dark eyes were boring into Harry's, who met his gaze unflinchingly, concentrating hard on what he had seen in his dream, willing Snape to read it in his mind, to understand.
"I wish to interrogate him," repeated Umbridge angrily,
and Snape looked away from Harry, back into her furiously quivering face.
"I wish you to provide me with a potion that will force him to tell me the truth."
"I have already told you," said Snape smoothly, "that I have no further stocks of Veritas Serum. Unless you wish to poison Potter, and I assure you I would have the greatest sympathy with you if you did, I cannot help you. The only trouble is that most venoms act too fast to give the victim much time for truth-telling.
Snape looked back at Harry, who stared at him, frantic to communicate without words.
"Voldemort's got serious in the Department of Mysteries," he thought desperately.
"Voldemort's got serious."
"You are on probation,"
shrieked Professor Umbridge, and Snape looked back at her, his eyebrows slightly raised.
"You are being deliberately unhelpful. I expected better. Lucius Malfoy always speaks most highly of you. Now, get out of my office."
Snape gave her an ironic bow and turned to leave. Harry knew his last chance of letting the Order know what was going on was walking out of the door.
"He's got Padfoot," he shouted. "He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden."
Snape had stopped with his hand on Umbridge's door handle.
"Padfoot?"
cried Professor Umbridge, looking eagerly from Harry to Snape.
"What is Padfoot? Where what is hidden? What does he mean, Snape?"
Snape looked around at Harry. His face was inscrutable. Harry could not tell whether he had understood or not, but he did not dare speak more plainly in front of Umbridge.
"I have no idea," said Snape coldly. "Potter, when I want nonsense shouted at me, I shall give you a babbling beverage. And Crab, loosen your hold a little. If Longbottom suffocates, it will mean a lot of tedious paperwork, and I'm afraid I shall have to mention it on your reference if ever you apply for a job."
He closed the door behind him with a snap, leaving Harry in a state of worse turmoil than before. Snape had been his very last hope. He looked at Umbridge, who seemed to be feeling the same way. Her chest was heaving with rage and frustration.
"Very well," she said, and she pulled out her wand. "Very well. I am left with no alternative. This is more than a matter of school discipline. This is an issue of ministry security. Yes, yes."
She seemed to be talking herself into something. She was shifting her weight nervously from foot to foot, staring at Harry, beating her wand against her empty palm and breathing heavily. Harry felt horribly powerless without his own wand as he watched her.
"You are forcing me, Potter. I do not want to,"
said Umbridge, still moving restlessly on the spot.
"But sometimes circumstances justify the use. I am sure the minister will understand that I had no choice."
Malfoy was watching her with a hungry expression on his face.
"The Cruciatus curse ought to loosen your tongue,"
said Umbridge quietly.
"No,"
shrieked Hermione.
"Professor Umbridge, it's illegal."
But Umbridge took no notice. There was a nasty, eager, excited look on her face that Harry had never seen before. She raised her wand.
"The minister wouldn't want you to break the law, Professor Umbridge," cried Hermione. "What Cornelius doesn't know won't hurt him,"
said Umbridge, who was now panting slightly as she pointed her wand at different parts of Harry's body in turn, apparently trying to decide what would hurt the most.
"He never knew I ordered Dementors after Potter last summer, but he was delighted to be given the chance to expel him all the same."
"It was you?" gasped Harry. "You sent the Dementors after me?"
"Somebody had to act,"
breathed Umbridge, as her wand came to rest, pointing directly at Harry's forehead.
"They were all bleating about silencing you somehow, discrediting you, but I was the one who actually did something about it. Only you wriggled out of that one, didn't you, Potter? Not today, though. Not now."
And taking a deep breath, she cried,
"Cust!" "No!"
shouted Hermione in a cracked voice from behind Millicent Bulstrode.
"No, Harry! Harry, we'll have to tell her!"
"No way!"
yelled Harry, staring at the little of Hermione he could see.
"We'll have to, Harry. She'll force it out of you anyway. What's the point?"
And Hermione began to cry weakly into the back of Millicent Bulstrode's robes. Millicent stopped trying to squash her against the wall immediately and dodged out of her way, looking disgusted.
"Well, well, well,"
said Umbridge, looking triumphant.
"Little Miss Question All is going to give us some answers. Come on then, girl. Come on."
"Hermione, no!"
shouted Ron through his gag. Ginny was staring at Hermione as though she had never seen her before. Neville, still choking for breath, was gazing at her too. But Harry had just noticed something. Though Hermione was sobbing desperately into her hands, there was no trace of a tear.
I'm sorry, everyone,"
said Hermione,
"but I can't stand it." That's right, girl,"
said Umbridge, seizing Hermione by the shoulders, thrusting her into the abandoned chintz chair and leaning over her.
"Now then, with whom was Potter communicating just now?"
"Well,"
gulped Hermione into her hands,
"well, he was trying to speak to Professor Dumbledore."
Ron froze, his eyes wide. Ginny stopped trying to stamp on her slithering captor's toes. Even Luna looked mildly surprised. Fortunately, the attention of Umbridge and her minions was focused too exclusively upon Hermione to notice these suspicious signs.
"Dumbledore?" said Umbridge eagerly. "You know where Dumbledore is, then?"
"Well, no," sobbed Hermione. "We've tried the leaky cauldron in Diagon Alley, and the three broomsticks, and even the Hog's Head."
"Idiot girl! Dumbledore won't be sitting in a pub when the whole ministry's looking for him,"
shouted Umbridge, disappointment etched in every sagging line of her face.
But we needed to tell him something important,"
wailed Hermione, holding her hands more tightly over her face, not, Harry knew, out of anguish, but to disguise the continued absence of tears.
"Yes,"
said Umbridge with a sudden resurgence of excitement.
"What was it you wanted to tell him?"
We wanted to tell him it's ready,"
choked Hermione.
"What's ready?"
demanded Umbridge, and now she grabbed Hermione's shoulders again and shook her slightly.
"What's ready, girl?"
The weapon," said Hermione.
"Weapon? Weapon?"
said Umbridge, and her eyes seemed to pop with excitement.
"You have been developing some method of resistance? A weapon you could use against the Ministry? On Professor Dumbledore's orders, of course."
Yes, gasped Hermione. "But he had to leave before it was finished, and now we've finished it for him, and we can't find him to tell him."
"What kind of weapon is it?"
said Umbridge harshly, her stubby hands still tight on Hermione's shoulders.
"We don't really understand it,"
said Hermione, sniffing loudly.
"We just did what Professor Dumbledore told us to do."
Umbridge straightened up, looking exultant.
"Lead me to the weapon," she said.
"I'm not showing them,"
said Hermione shrilly, looking around at the Slytherins through her fingers.
"It is not for you to set conditions,"
said Professor Umbridge harshly.
"Fine,"
said Hermione, now sobbing into her hands again.
"Fine. Let them see it. I hope they use it on you. In fact, I wish you'd invite loads and loads of people to come and see. That would serve you right. Oh, I'd love it if the whole school knew where it was and how to use it. And then if you annoy any of them, they'll be able to sort you out."
These words had a powerful impact on Umbridge. She glanced swiftly and suspiciously around at her inquisitorial squad, her bulging eyes resting for a moment on Malfoy, who was too slow to disguise the look of eagerness and greed that had appeared on his face. Umbridge contemplated Hermione for another long moment, and then spoke in what she clearly thought was a motherly voice.
"All right, dear. Let's make it just you and me. And we'll take Potter too, shall we? Get up now."
"Professor," said Malfoy eagerly. "Professor Umbridge, I think some of the squad should come with you to look after—"
"I am a fully qualified ministry official, Malfoy. Do you really think I cannot manage two wandless teenagers alone?"
asked Umbridge sharply.
"In any case, it does not sound as though this weapon is something that school children should see. You will remain here until I return and make sure none of these—"
she gestured around at Ron, Ginny, Neville, and Luna.
"Escape."
"All right," said Malfoy, looking sulky and disappointed.
"And you two can go ahead of me and show me the way,"
said Umbridge, pointing at Harry and Hermione with her wand.
"Lead on."
Chapter 33 Fight and Flight. Harry had no idea what Hermione was planning, or even whether she had a plan. He walked half a pace behind her as they headed down the corridor outside Umbridge's office, knowing it would look very suspicious if he appeared not to know where they were going. He did not dare attempt to talk to her. Umbridge was walking so closely behind them that he could hear her ragged breathing. Hermione led the way down the stairs into the entrance hall. The din of loud voices and the clatter of cutlery on plates echoed from out of the double doors to the great hall. It seemed incredible to Harry that 20 feet away were people who were enjoying dinner, celebrating the end of exams, not a care in the world. Hermione walked straight out of the oak front doors and down the stone steps into the balmy evening air. The sun was falling toward the tops of the trees in the Forbidden Forest now, as Hermione marched purposefully across the grass, Umbridge jogging to keep up. Their long dark shadows rippled over the grass behind them like cloaks.
"It's hidden in Hagrid's hut, is it?"
said Umbridge eagerly in Harry's ear.
"Of course not," said Hermione scathingly. "Hagrid might have set it off accidentally."
"Yes," said Umbridge, whose excitement seemed to be mounting.
"Yes, yes, he would have done, of course. The great half-breed oaf."
She laughed. Harry felt a strong urge to swing around and seize her by the throat, but resisted. His scar was throbbing in the soft evening air, but it had not yet burned white hot, as he knew it would if Voldemort had moved in for the kill.
"Then where is it?"
asked Umbridge, with a hint of uncertainty in her voice, as Hermione continued to stride toward the forest.
"In there, of course," said Hermione, pointing into the dark trees. "It had to be somewhere that students weren't going to find it accidentally, didn't it?" "Of course," said Umbridge, though she sounded a little apprehensive now. "Of course. Very well, then. You two stay ahead of me."
"Can we have your wand, then, if we're going first?" Harry asked her.
"No, I don't think so, Mr. Potter,"
said Umbridge sweetly, poking him in the back with it.
"The Ministry places a rather higher value on my life than yours, I'm afraid."
As they reached the cool shade of the first trees, Harry tried to catch Hermione's eye. Walking into the forest without wands seemed to him to be more foolhardy than anything they had done so far this evening. She, however, merely gave Umbridge a contemptuous glance and plunged straight into the trees, moving at such a pace that Umbridge, with her shorter legs, had difficulty in keeping up.
"Is it very far in?"
Umbridge asked as her robe ripped on a bramble.
"Oh, yes," said Hermione. "Yes, it's well hidden."
Harry's misgivings increased. Hermione was not taking the path they had followed to visit Grawp, but the one he had followed 3 years ago to the lair of the monster Aragog. Hermione had not been with him on that occasion. He doubted she had any idea what danger lay at the end of it.
Are you sure this is the right way?" he asked her pointedly.
"Oh, yes,"
she said in a steely voice, crashing through the undergrowth with what he thought was a wholly unnecessary amount of noise. Behind them, Umbridge tripped over a fallen sapling. Neither of them paused to help her up again. Hermione merely strode on, calling loudly over her shoulder.
"It's a bit further in."
"Hermione, keep your voice down," Harry muttered, hurrying to catch up with her.
"Anything could be listening in here."
"I want us heard,"
she answered quietly, as Umbridge jogged noisily after them.
"You'll see."
They walked on for what seemed a long time, until they were once again so deep into the forest that the dense tree canopy blocked out all light. Harry had the feeling he had had before in the forest, one of being watched by unseen eyes.
"How much further?"
demanded Umbridge angrily from behind him.
"Not far now,"
shouted Hermione, as they emerged into a dim, dank clearing.
"Just a little bit."
An arrow flew through the air and landed with a menacing thud in the tree just over her head. The air was suddenly full of the sound of hooves. Harry could feel the forest floor trembling. Umbridge gave a little scream and pushed him in front of her like a shield. He wrenched himself free of her and turned. Around 50 centaurs were emerging on every side, their bows raised and loaded, pointing at Harry, Hermione, and Umbridge, who backed slowly into the center of the clearing, Umbridge uttering odd little whimpers of terror. Harry looked sideways at Hermione. She was wearing a triumphant smile.
"Who are you?"
said a voice. Harry looked left. The chestnut-bodied centaur called Magorian was walking toward them out of the circle. His bow, like the others, was raised. On Harry's right, Umbridge was still whimpering, her wand trembling violently as she pointed it at the advancing centaur.
"I asked you, who are you, human?" said Magorian roughly.
"I am Dolores Umbridge,"
said Umbridge in a high-pitched, terrified voice.
"Senior Under-Secretary to the Minister of Magic, and Headmistress and High Inquisitor of Hogwarts."
"You are from the Ministry of Magic?"
said Magorian, as many of the centaurs in the surrounding circle shifted restlessly.
"That's right,"
said Umbridge in an even higher voice.
"So be very careful. By the laws laid down by the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, any attack by half-breeds such as yourselves on a human..."
"What did you call us?"
shouted a wild-looking black centaur, whom Harry recognized as Bane. There was a great deal of angry muttering and tightening of bowstrings around them.
"Don't call them that,"
Hermione said furiously, but Umbridge did not appear to have heard her.
Still pointing her shaking wand at Megorian, she continued,
Law 15b states clearly that any attack by a magical creature who is deemed to have near-human intelligence and therefore considered responsible for its actions...
Near-human intelligence?
Repeated Megorian, as Bane and several others roared with rage and pawed the ground.
We consider that a great insult, human. Our intelligence thankfully far outstrips your own. What are you doing in our forest?
Bellowed the hard-faced grey centaur, whom Harry and Hermione had seen on their last trip into the forest.
Why are you here?
Your forest?
Said Umbridge, shaking now not only with fright, but also, it seemed, with indignation.
I would remind you that you live here only because the Ministry of Magic permits you certain areas of land.
An arrow flew so close to her head that it caught at her mousy hair in passing. She let out an ear-splitting scream and threw her hands over her head, while some of the centaurs bellowed their approval, and others laughed raucously, the sound of their wild neighing laughter echoing around the dimly lit clearing, and the sight of their pawing hooves was extremely unnerving.
"Whose forest is it now, human?"
bellowed Bane.
"Filthy half-breeds!"
she screamed, her hands still tight over her head.
"Beasts! Uncontrolled animals!"
"Be quiet!"
shouted Hermione, but it was too late. Umbridge pointed her wand at Megorian and screamed,
"Incarcerus!"
Ropes flew out of midair like thick snakes, wrapping themselves tightly around the centaur's torso and trapping his arms. He gave a cry of rage and reared onto his hind legs, attempting to free himself, while the other centaurs charged. Harry grabbed Hermione and pulled her to the ground. Face down on the forest floor, he knew a moment of terror as hooves thundered around him, but the centaurs leapt over and around them, bellowing and screaming with rage.
"No!"
he heard Umbridge shriek.
"No! I am Senior Undersecretary! You cannot unhand me, you animals! No!"
He saw a flash of red light and knew that she had attempted to stun one of them. Then she screamed very loudly. Lifting his head a few inches, Harry saw that Umbridge had been seized from behind by Bane and lifted high into the air, wriggling and yelling with fright. Her wand fell from her hand to the ground, and Harry's heart leapt. If he could just reach it! But as he stretched out a hand toward it, a centaur's hoof descended upon the wand, and it broke cleanly in half.
"Now!"
roared a voice in Harry's ear, and a thick, hairy arm descended from thin air and dragged him upright. Hermione, too, had been pulled to her feet. Over the plunging, many-colored backs and heads of the centaurs, Harry saw Umbridge being borne away through the trees by Bane, still screaming non-stop. Her voice grew fainter and fainter until they could no longer hear it over the trampling of hooves surrounding them.
"And these?"
said the hard-faced gray centaur holding Hermione.
"They are young,"
said a slow, doleful voice from behind Harry.
"We do not attack fools."
"They brought her here, Ronan,"
replied the centaur who had such a firm grip on Harry.
"And they are not so young. He is nearing manhood, this one."
He shook Harry by the neck of his robes.
"Please," said Hermione breathlessly, "please don't attack us. We don't think like her. We aren't Ministry of Magic employees. We only came in here because we hoped you'd drive her off for us."
Harry knew at once from the look on the face of the grey centaur holding Hermione that she had made a terrible mistake in saying this. The grey centaur threw back his head, his back legs stamping furiously, and bellowed,
"You see, Ronan? They already have the arrogance of their kind. So we were to do your dirty work, were we, human girl? We were to act as your servants, drive away your enemies like obedient hounds?"
"No,"
said Hermione in a horror-struck squeak.
"Please, I didn't mean that. I just hope you'd be able to help us."
But she seemed to be going from bad to worse.
"We do not help humans,"
snarled the centaur holding Harry, tightening his grip and rearing a little at the same time, so that Harry's feet left the ground momentarily.
"We are a race apart and proud to be so. We will not permit you to walk from here boasting that we did your bidding."
"We're not going to say anything like that,"
Harry shouted.
"We know you didn't do anything because we wanted you to..."
But nobody seemed to be listening to him. A bearded centaur toward the back of the crowd shouted,
"They came here unasked! They must pay the consequences!"
A roar of approval met these words, and a dun-colored centaur shouted,
"They can join the woman!"
"You said you didn't hurt the innocent,"
shouted Hermione, real tears sliding down her face now.
We haven't done anything to hurt you. We haven't used wands or threats. We just want to go back to school. Please, let us go back.
We are not all like the traitor Ferenzi, human girl,
shouted the Grey Centaur to more neighing roars of approval from his fellows.
Perhaps you thought us pretty talking horses? We are an ancient people who will not stand wizard invasions and insults. We do not recognize your laws. We do not acknowledge your superiority. We are...
But they did not hear what else centaurs were, for at that moment there came a crashing noise on the edge of the clearing so loud that all of them, Harry, Hermione, and the 50 or so centaurs filling the clearing, looked around. Harry's centaur let him fall to the ground again as his hands flew to his bow and quiver of arrows. Hermione had been dropped too, and Harry hurried toward her as two thick tree trunks parted ominously, and the monstrous form of Grawp, the giant, appeared in the gap. The centaurs nearest him backed into those behind. The clearing was now a forest of bows and arrows waiting to be fired, all pointing upwards at the enormous greyish face now looming over them from just beneath the thick canopy of branches. Grawp's lopsided mouth was gaping stupidly. They could see his brick-like yellow teeth glimmering in the half-light, his dull, sludge-colored eyes narrowed as he squinted down at the creatures at his feet. Broken ropes trailed from both ankles. He opened his mouth even wider.
Hagger!
Harry did not know what Hagger meant or what language it was from, nor did he much care. He was watching Grawp's feet, which were almost as long as Harry's whole body. Hermione gripped his arm tightly. The centaurs were quite silent, staring up at the giant, whose huge round head moved from side to side as he continued to peer amongst them, as though looking for something he had dropped.
Hagger!
He said again, more insistently.
Get away from here, giant, called Magorian. You are not welcome among us.
These words seemed to make no impression whatsoever on Grawp. He stooped a little, the centaur's arms tensed on their bows, and then bellowed,
Hagger!
A few of the centaurs looked worried now. Hermione, however, gave a gasp.
Harry, she whispered, I think he's trying to say Hagrid.
At this precise moment, Grawp caught sight of them, the only two humans in a sea of centaurs. He lowered his head another foot or so, staring intently at them. Harry could feel Hermione shaking as Grawp opened his mouth wide again and said, in a deep, rumbling voice,
Hermy!
Goodness,
said Hermione, gripping Harry's arm so tightly it was growing numb and looking as though she was about to faint.
He remembered.
Hermy, roared Grawp. Where, Hagger?
I don't know, squealed Hermione, terrified. I'm sorry, Grawp. I don't know.
Grawp want Hagger.
One of the giant's massive hands swooped down upon them. Hermione let out a real scream, ran a few steps backward, and fell over. Devoid of a wand, Harry braced himself to punch, kick, bite, or whatever else it took, as the hand flew toward him and knocked a snow-white centaur off his legs. It was what the centaurs had been waiting for. Grawp's outstretched fingers were a foot from Harry when 50 arrows went soaring through the air at the giant, peppering his enormous face, causing him to howl with pain and rage, and straighten up again, rubbing his face with his enormous hands, breaking off the arrow shafts, but forcing the heads in still deeper. He yelled and stamped his enormous feet, and the centaurs scattered out of the way. Pebble-sized droplets of Grawp's blood showered Harry as he pulled Hermione to her feet, and the pair of them ran as fast as they could for the shelter of the trees. Once there, they looked back. Grawp was snatching blindly at the centaurs as blood ran all down his face. They were retreating in disorder, galloping away through the trees on the other side of the clearing. As Harry and Hermione watched, Grawp gave another roar of fury and plunged after them, smashing more trees aside as he went.
"Oh, no," said Hermione, quaking so badly that her knees gave way. "Oh, that was horrible. And he might kill them all."
"I'm not that fussed, to be honest," said Harry bitterly. The sounds of the galloping centaurs and the blundering giant were growing fainter and fainter. As Harry listened to them, his scar gave another great throb, and a wave of terror swept over him. They had wasted so much time. They were even further from rescuing Sirius than they had been when he had had the vision. Not only had Harry managed to lose his wand, but they were stuck in the middle of the Forbidden Forest with no means of transport whatsoever. "Smart plan," he spat at Hermione, keen to release some of his fury. "Really smart plan. Where do we go from here?"
"We need to get back up to the castle,"